Good afternoon. My name is Victoria Ackroyd, and today I am going to be talking about the impact of fall-planted cover crops on greenhouse gas emissions. So, to begin with, at the beginning, why even study greenhouse gas emissions in a cropping system, especially through the fall, winter, and spring when you expect gas emissions to be fairly low? Well, it comes down to a matter of both economics and the environment. The greenhouse gas that my project is looking at is nitrous oxide. So anytime you're looking at a potential way for nitrogen to escape the system, you are automatically dealing with an economic issue, because nitrogen that has escaped the system is nitrogen that is not potentially available for a following cash crop to use. Likewise, in terms of the environment, nitrous oxide on a molecule-per-molecule basis is 300 times more potent than carbon dioxide. It has 300 times carbon dioxide's potential to trap heat in the atmosphere. From a global warming and climate change standpoint, this is a rather important thing to look at. So in Michigan, we've been encouraging farmers to plant cover crops in the fall, and they've been doing so in large part because they're interested in having something in the ground to scavenge residual soil nitrogen. However, we've been having a lot of questions raised about what is happening to this residual soil nitrogen, especially in terms of the radish that I'm going to be talking about. Well, there's two major things that can happen to this nitrogen. It can either stay in the system or it can leave the system. And in terms of leaving the system, usually in Michigan, you're either looking at leaching, runoff, and you're also looking at denitrification potentially and greenhouse gas emissions. Leaching and runoff are very common research topics. Greenhouse gas emissions, not so much so, so this is why we're interested in it. Now, of course, what happens to that nitrogen is going to depend on the cover crops, the weather, the soil, and so on. So we decided to look at two cover crops that are similar in a couple of key respects and very different in a couple of others. Oilseed radish and annual ryegrass are increasingly popular with farmers. They're both believed to be nitrogen scavengers. However, this is where the similarities pretty well end. Radish is a broadleaf. It does not survive the winter in Michigan, and winter in Michigan is very, very long. This is a problem because radish also has a relatively low carbon to nitrogen ratio, which raises the question, are the following cash crops actually seeing any of the nitrogen that the radish planted in the fall scavenges? On the other hand, we have the opposite problem with annual ryegrass. In spite of the name, annual ryegrass does generally overwinter, and by the spring, it has a fairly high carbon to nitrogen ratio. There's concerns about, you know, whether or not this cover crop is immobilizing nitrogen in the soil and preventing a cash crop from immediately accessing it. So those are two of my treatments, and then the third cover crop treatment is actually looking at a mix of these two crops to see if we can mitigate some of the disadvantages of each of these cover crops. So we have several project objectives. The one that I'll have time to talk about today is an evaluation of the fall through spring greenhouse gas emissions in this cover cropping system. And below you can see some pictures of the apparatus that I used. The picture on the right is one of my replications partially set up. And on the left, we have the chamber, the vials, the syringe. So, my treatments. I have a bare fallow control, annual ryegrass, the radish, and then radish plus ryegrass. It's important to note that the radish is planted at the same rate in both treatments, whereas annual ryegrass is planted at half the rate in mixture as it is in pure stand. So moving on to my experimental design, this is a randomized controlled block. Randomized complete block design study with four replications, two sites in 2 years, but I'm only going to talk about three site years today. It's important to note that the soils between these sites are different. In East Lansing, the fields between the 2 years were different. The first year, it was almost divided dead down the middle. We had Riddles, Hillsdale, Sandy, Loam for my first two reps, and we had Amatilla, Loamy, Sand for the second two reps. The other thing to note is that in East Lansing, we have relatively high organic matter content, whereas in Hickory Corners, the organic matter content is lower and the soil is a little more uniform. Both years, in both fields, it was a Kalamazoo loam. This project ran fall 2012 through fall 2014. So the weather definitely bears mentioning, and I'm not going to read through this except to say that in Michigan, we have the standard cold, usually snowy winter. We have usually cool, rainy spring and fall, and then we usually have a hot, dry summer. It is important to note that between the two sites, temperatures are fairly similar, even though the sites are about 100 miles apart. The other thing to note is that this past winter was unusually cold, and that can impact the ability of cover crops to overwinter. Now, while temperatures are similar between KBS and East Lansing, KBS is unique in that it is to the west of us. It's a little closer to Lake Michigan, so it gets lake effect snow. As a result, some years KBS saw twice the amount of snow that East Lansing saw. Snow cover is another thing that can contribute to the ability of cover crops to overwinter. The other thing to note about the weather on this slide is that not only was this past winter unusually cold, it was also unusually snowy at both sites. Now, why did I just show you two slides showing weather conditions? Well, because in this project, weather conditions are very important. The onset of fall freezing determines how long of a period the radish is in the field to have the chance to decompose. Speaking of that radish's decomposition, what happens with that is it winter kills after a period of prolonged freezing, and then it stays cold for a while and the biomass just kind of sits there. And then we have a warming up period, and this is the point at which the biomass decomposes. Leaching, of course, you need wet conditions, and then directly pertinent to my project, nitrification and denitrification. Denitrification, and I've written out the chemical process here, is the process that results in nitrous oxide, which eventually, once it warms up, is released into the atmosphere. It's important to note that denitrification is bacterially mediated, and of course bacteria don't particularly like freezing soil. So I go out into the field to measure during this period when the soil is about 10 degrees Celsius. So just to give you an idea of my project timeline, what we do is we harvest the wheat in July, plant cover crops in August. Any cover crops that have overwintered, we go on ahead and terminate April into May-ish. And then we plant our field corn in May and we let our field corn go. In terms of data collection, in the fall, before the onset of that freezing winter, over about a 5-week period, I take 3 sets of baseline gas samples at each site. Then I go on ahead and I wait until that 10 degrees Celsius weather that I was telling you about earlier, and hopefully this is a period when there's decomposition and emissions occurring. So I do a period of intensive sampling, 3 to 4 sets of samples over a 7 to 10 day period. Then in the spring, before we kill any surviving winter crops, we go on ahead and we take 3 more sets of baseline samples. And then once a month during field corn season at each site, we go on ahead and we take more samples. So results. These are my fields in the spring right before cover crop termination. And you can see we have the control. We have those lovely, lovely holes left by the radish in the mixture and also down here in the pure stand treatment, and annual ryegrass, which is a very vigorous grower in the spring. So I'm going to start with the cover crop biomass data. And what we see, I was able to combine years at each site, is that there was a difference at East Lansing in terms of biomass production. Radish produced, you know, just over 2,500 kilograms per hectare of biomass in East Lansing. You can see quite a difference there between East Lansing and KBS, where it's down around 1,500 kilograms per hectare of biomass. And then, of course, radish and annual ryegrass in their pure stand forms produce more biomass than the mixture treatment. Moving on to the spring, up here I've got a line just reminding you of where that maximum biomass production was. But you can see that radish is winter killed as expected. There's no biomass there. And you can see that annual ryegrass in both East Lansing and KBS has produced more biomass in pure stand than in mixture. This is not surprising since, if you recall, in mixture we planted it at half the rate of in pure stand. So each of these dots represents a sampling date. On the left, on the y-axis, we have grams N2O nitrogen emitted per hectare per day. So if we want to look at peak radish emissions, this is about 15 grams of N2ON emitted on this date in the radish treatment at East Lansing. And I'm only going to show you the first year for East Lansing here. I have also gone on ahead and put a line to show you where the maximum control emissions are. And as you can see, the radish and mixture treatments generally emitted more nitrogen than the control treatment. Now, again, note that peak, 15 grams N2ON per hectare per day. Moving on to KBS, same y-axis, and we're all the way down here. Again, there's a line so that you can see where the peak for the control was, and you can see there's less differences among the treatments and no clear patterns among the treatments either. So this is the first year for KBS, and moving on to the second year of KBS, you see similar results. Again, far lower greenhouse gas emissions than in East Lansing, and this time you can see, you know, radish did emit a little bit more nitrogen than some of the other treatments, but it's not as clean a pattern as you can hope. Now, the nifty thing about this is that these types of graphs are hard to draw statistical inferences from, but you can go on ahead and you can do the math and figure out the area under each of these lines and calculate the cumulative nitrogen emissions over any given period, which is exactly what I did, and then these numbers you can run through ANOVA. So in East Lansing, going all the way up here, you can see radish did indeed emit more N2ON than the control, and you can see that the control and annual ryegrass are the same, and actually radish and the mixture are the same. Now this graph looks really dramatic until you realize that 2,000 grams of N2ON per hectare is 2 kilograms per hectare, which is roughly 1.8 pounds per acre. Suddenly, it's not so impressive in terms of nitrogen loss. And this is for the period from October through the following August, so this is over a 10-month period. Going to KBS, I was able to combine years. There was no significant difference among treatments. And again, as you would expect from looking at the line graphs, you can see that emissions at KBS were far lower than in East Lansing. So some conclusions. Greenhouse gas emissions did vary by site. This could be due to the soil fertility and the soil type. I noted organic matter content was far higher in East Lansing. Could be due to the cover crop biomass production. Again, cover crop biomass production was higher in East Lansing. Greenhouse gas emissions at KBS did not vary by year. This may be because the soils were similar in both fields. Weather patterns were fairly similar in both fields. Biomass at KBS was fairly similar both years. I think it's interesting to note that so far greenhouse gas emissions don't appear to be a major pathway for nitrogen loss. It's difficult to see patterns in those line graphs, but I think we can safely say that, you know, nitrous oxide emissions are low during the fall baseline sampling periods. Radish plots generally have higher emissions. There are fewer and smaller differences among treatments at KBS as compared to East Lansing. And in spite of the line graphs, analysis of the bar graph data suggests that there are a few differences among treatments, at least at KBS. So a few things to consider. This is a preliminary analysis. There needs to be a more in-depth analysis of these gas sample results, and I'm actually looking forward to the workshop on Thursday that's going to be talking about that. I need to connect gas sample results with soil sample results, which we haven't gotten in yet, the weather, and various field operations will also impact gas emissions. And finally, it's important to remember, the number of sampling dates for this type of project will determine how sound your data are. We have logistic issues. We could only be in the field so often. If you're going to do this type of project, I would suggest focusing in more clearly on a specific period during the year rather than trying to stretch across the whole year. So I would like to offer thanks to a bunch of people, our farm staff, our research technicians, our undergrad assistants. This work certainly does not do itself. I'd also like to thank our funding sources. I've gotten several departmental funding scholarships, MSU Project Green, there's an NCR SARE student grant, and USDA NIFA has also helped with this project. And with that, I would like to thank you for your attention, and are there any questions? So the question is, do we plan on doing more sampling or extending this project further? This project is actually a sub-project of a larger USDA NIFA project, which will continue on. However, my project is only going to be 2 years long. I'm hoping that the analysis of the year two data for East Lansing will provide some interesting insights as well, but right now the results were so drastically different that I didn't feel comfortable presenting them. Other questions?
So you're showing the first site, you had around 2 pounds of nitrogen per hectare being per acre being lost, and then with one more N2O?
In East Lansing, yes.
So how do you compare that against the amount of nitrogen you have to apply for radish?
Okay, so the question is, compared to the amount of nitrogen applied for radish, what's the deal with these N2O emissions? First off, fall-planted radishes can be fertilized. We did not apply any fertilizer at all to this system, not in the corn, not in the cover crops. The only nitrogen that was added to this system was added before the project started, when wheat was fertilized the previous spring. So basically, in terms of fertilizer that corn would receive, this is a very small fraction. I mean, it's common to apply 100.
So radish, if you were to fertilize radish, if you have to supply N for radish growth.
Okay, so you're wondering what the results would be if we had applied fertilizer.
Maybe I'm confusing you. So radish has N requirement, right? What is the N requirement of radish?
No, radish is typically used as a cover crop. I'm not sure that they're... It's not typically fertilized. However, there are special cases where they do recommend it be fertilized because you want to maximize biomass production. But those are such side cases that I honestly don't know if there are recommendations. Other questions? Okay, so the question is, did we do any measurements on the following corn crop? And the answer is, we most certainly did. We did a lot of measurements. We took height, we did SPAD, we did yield, we did corn stalk nitrogen. I didn't have time to present them, and honestly, we haven't completed the analysis on those data. Anyone else? We don't grow spring wheat, generally speaking. The wheat would have been planted... Oh, boy, let me go back to that. Okay, so this was winter wheat that was planted in, you know, September, October of... That would have been 2011. Harvested in July of 2012. And then the cover crops were put on. But they do apply fertilizer in the spring to the wheat. And that would have been the last. That's correct. We did not.
What was the experimental reasoning for foregoing any nitrogen fertility on such a nitrogen-hungry crop when studying nitrous oxide emissions?
So the question is, why did we not fertilize the corn? We were kind of hoping to eliminate fertilizer as a variable. We weren't expecting to see huge differences, and we were worried that if we added fertilizer, it would obscure the effects of the different cover crops, if that makes any sense.
Yeah, I was just curious why, typically when you see nitrous oxide studies, you really expect that first after a fertilizer application. So it's easy to use the cover crop.
Yeah, we were looking primarily at the cover crop. And you're right, you do see a burst after fertilizer application. A lot of times you'll also see a burst after tillage or after corn planting. Like I said, I want to go back and connect the gas sampling results with the field operations. Others?
We're a little bit over time.
Oh dear, excuse me. Thank you all, and good afternoon.